Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Fridays, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. So excited for our guest today. We're talking with the owner of a hotel from Illinois called the Original Springs Hotel, and it's in an old town and one of the original mineral springs locations that's still left in the whole state of Illinois. And I wanted to interview Mary Benengarby today because she's got a lot of interesting stories, not only about how to run a small business, how to inspire your staff, and how to be successful dealing with people, et cetera, but some great stories about the property itself and some interesting history. So welcome to the program, Mary. Are you with us?
Yes, I am, Brenda. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And yourself?
Great, good.
Great.
Well, I have never been to your fine town of Oakville from the East Coast originally, but tell us about your town and what it was like growing up in a small town in the Midwest.
Well, Oakville is a small town, naturally. It's 1,300 people large. It is a very unique little town in the aspect that people are extremely friendly in Oakville. That's the one comment we hear at the hotel a lot of times. People might take a stroll around town on the sidewalks, and people wave to you. Once in a while, somebody will stop and say, hey, do you need a lift somewhere or something like that. They're just very outgoing, friendly people. And growing up in Oakville, that is the way I learned life is supposed to be. You're supposed to help your fellow man. You're supposed to do what you can for your neighbor. It's just a different way of life, I think, for some people. We hear that comment, you know, that people find it kind of amazing. My children all went to school here in Oakville, and that was one of the things I really liked, was because the teachers really care about the kids. You know, one time one of my kids was having a little trouble, and they called me to the school and say, hey, is there something going on that we need to be aware of? Because we've noticed just a few unusual things about your kid. And I was like, well, you know, we've got a couple of things going on right now, and I will address this with my child when I get home, you know. But it was those kind of things, not knowing how this was even affecting my child. But these people did see it at school, and that was really nice because it brought it to attention, and we made the changes that we need to make life a little more easier for that child. And
so people are involved, and they know each other, and they're sort of hands-on. And, I mean, sometimes you hear, like, that's a really positive story, and then sometimes you hear about small towns, like, everyone knows your business. Is that a good thing or a bad thing in Oakville?
Oh, I think that can go either way, to be honest with you. It just kind of depends on, you know, what you need to – you would like to keep quiet and to yourself, and sometimes, yeah, people do talk too much, but I think that's human nature. And sometimes I also think that's a point of, you know, somebody cares. Mm-hmm. They care what's happening to you. I remember
so
one
it's
time
like a
when,
big family.
It is like a big family. You know, one time there was a young lady that was diagnosed with a cancer situation in Oakville. And the whole town kind of pooled together to help them get what they needed. We had benefits and things like that to help them get what they needed to help their child. Well, now she's a very successful adult.
Wow. And so you grew up there, went to grade school there, and you used to go to this particular hotel to go to the restaurant, right? Tell us about your earliest memories.
One experience with the original Springs when I was a child. I grew up on a farm outside of Oakville, and my family worked very hard on the farm. My dad worked in town also, so when he got off working in town, he went and we spent weekends on the farm getting our farm ready for crops and whatever it was we needed to do. So we didn't do a lot of things, and plus, you know, you're looking at, that was back a long time ago. We won't go how far back, but, you know, people just didn't go out like they do nowadays. And I happened to be a cheerleader for the grade school team, and we won a big basketball tournament one time. And so to celebrate the winning of the basketball tournament, they brought the players and the cheerleaders to the original Springs for burgers and fries. And I remember the bus pulling up to the side of the building and thinking, wow, that's really an amazing building. And walking inside, I was in the 7th or 8th grade at that time, and walking inside and just being kind of taken back by the beauty of the place. I mean, there's chandeliers in the dining room. There's a wooden ballroom-type floor. And just thinking, oh, it was really neat looking. You know, and then I was there with all my friends, so yeah, that was a thing I noticed when I first went in, and I've always kind of gone back to that, because when I do things here at the hotel, that's the things I like to hear when somebody walks in. It's like, wow, you know?
Yeah, you want that wow effect. Yeah.
You want the wow factor.
But yeah, and so you had some memories there, and what was the family or the previous owners? I mean, you've had this place a very long time, 24 years. You know, did you know the previous owners?
I did, actually. I actually had my first job. I became a server in the dining room, and I worked for the previous owner. Ab and Doris were the previous owners. They're actually who we bought the hotel from. Ab and Doris were here at the hotel for 26 years when they sold the business to us. But I worked here in the dining room for probably a year and a half when I was 18 years old.
Wow. Okay. So has it changed much over the last 20 years? Or what was some of the things you did, you know, when you took it over that you had to, you know, I'm sure upgrade or do something because it's an older house? When does it date back also?
Oh, the building, well, the building that we're in today, it opened up May the 1st, 1893, and it actually is the second building that is here, a second hotel. The very first hotel, it burnt to the ground in 1890, and so then they rebuilt this one on the same foundation. Yes, there was a lot of things that needed to be done, some updating that needed to be done, though even under the previous owner, they were constantly doing updating, things that needed to be done, and to try and bring it up. You know, it's kind of interesting once in a while when you take a building as old as ours, 1893, and you're trying to bring it up to the expectations of today's clientele. It can be a little tricky once in a while because
I'm
the building doesn't always want to accommodate what you think you need to do.
Well, things like insulation and plumbing and wiring, and I grew up in New England in an older home, and so I know what those older houses can be like, but take us back to the 1800s. What kind of history have you discovered? I mean, this place was originally built right after the Civil War. Was, you know, this area booming because of the springs, or were people moving there after the war? You know, do you know much of the history from the 1800s?
The original Springs sits in Oakville, which just celebrated its 175th anniversary. You know, I mean, so the Oakville was just getting settled and everything around that time. So you had a lot of people immigrating to this area. People came from. Germany was one of the biggest areas that people in this, you got a lot of German names here. We have Hochsteds and Hofsiders and, you know, just real German names. And, but in 1867, there was a gentleman that started a saddlery and harness shop on the grounds at the original Springs, and his name was Rudolf Plagi. He dug a well, and then he began to experience some trouble with one of the tin kettles starting to leak. So he went to the blacksmith in town, and he asked to have new kettles made. Well, the blacksmith made him new kettles, and he took those back, and he started using them, and he noticed they were deteriorating again. So he complained that he was using an inferior grade of tin to make these kettles. Well, there was a gentleman in town, and his name was Dr. McElwain. And Dr. McElwain was friends to both the blacksmith and Mr. Plagi, and he didn't like to see his friends in this disagreement. So he did some simple tests on the water, and he found it had a high mineral content in it. And so he sent samples to St. Louis, and the test that they did and everything, they showed that it had very strong medicinal qualities. Comparing the waters to those from Carlsbad, Germany,
wow,
and Hot Springs, Arkansas. Though ours is not hot when it comes out of the ground, it's actually cold when it comes out of the ground. It's about 63 degrees.
Okay, that's a lot colder than most springs.
Exactly.
So then do you have to heat it up?
We heat it up because it's a little tough to take a mineral bath in 63-degree water.
Yeah. So a lot of the springs I'm familiar with, like out in Colorado, you know, Idaho Springs and Glenwood Springs and Hot Sulphur Springs, are you in that vein of sulfur, pretty much, a high sulfur content?
Well, see, I'm not really sure. I've not had the opportunity to go to those places. The one thing I will tell you, Brenda, that ours, we get this a lot of times when people come here because they do associate mineral water with a high sulfur content. Now, yes, we do have sulfur in our mineral water. But when you come here, you do not smell the sulfur.
Oh, okay.
Like,
that's what,
I don't know
what
if you've
my
ever
question
been,
was.
Yeah, if you've ever been to French Lick, Indiana, you can smell the sulfur in the town when you pull into it.
Yeah.
And they used to sell their Polluto water. Used to amaze me that people would drink water that smelled like that. But our water, the comment I get when I have people try our mineral water is it tastes so clean.
Mm.
And it has absolutely no smell to it.
Oh, wow.
And that's what
great.
Amazes people the most.
And has anyone ever bottled any of the water there? I mean, do
we
people drink it?
We did bottle the water at one time. We bottled the water. When we first got here, we were bottling the water. At that time, because you're back in 1990, water consumption was not as big as what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had a situation where an authority came in and said, okay, we don't like where you're bottling your water in this building. If you build a new facility across the street, you can bottle it over
mm-hmm.
there, but you're not allowed to bottle it here anymore. So we decided, okay, here we're faced with a 100-year-old hotel that needs renovations in the worst way and putting up a new bottling facility. So we decided, okay, we would stop bottling the water and we would kind of concentrate everything on renovating the hotel and getting it going. But it's always been an underlying dream of mine that someday I will put that building up across the street and we'll go back to bottling the water.
Well,
I haven't done that yet, though.
Well, you seem to have plenty of things to do right now. You wear many hats. I mean, you're the owner of the hotel and the spa. You staff and manage the spa. You manage the restaurant. You sometimes are a bartender, a cook, a delivery driver. And, I mean, all the different things. I know having my own business, there are so many aspects to having a business. And then on top of that, you know, catering to the needs of your hotel guests. So what's that like and juggling all these roles and how do you manage doing all that in one day?
Well, my staff will tell you I don't sleep very much. But it, I'm very fortunate that I have a very good staff that helps me with many of these things. And, you know, today I had a lot of things going on, so I had people come in. I had some catering to do. They came in and they did my catering for me. And, you know, so I'm really fortunate in that aspect. I love my job. It takes me in so many different directions. I like the diversity of it because I never know what I'm going to be working with that day when I come in the morning. You know, I mean, I might think I have an idea, but sometimes when I walk in within the first hour, things get changed.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you think some of the traits to being successful in a business dealing with people, what are some of the traits you think that, you know, are important for other business owners if you were giving advice to someone starting their own hotel or B&B or customer service type business? What would you tell them?
I think one of the things that you really you need to be able to want to put in the time, believe in your project, believe in what you're wanting to do. I think that's what helps me probably the most is because I believe in the Original Springs. I believe that it is a benefit to other people, be it in the waters or if it's aqua aerobics in the swimming pool. You know, it's a diner in the restaurant. You know, I like helping people. I like to be there to assist people, and I think not taking myself, I don't try to take on, don't let people weigh me down. I try to keep positive aspect people around me because that helps me a lot. And I think, you know, once in a while after the bathhouse is closed, I take one of my little perks and I'll just go relax in a mineral bath for a while. I need that time just to myself also.
That's so important, and to take time for yourself. And I talk a lot about self-care and self-love to women, and a lot of busy women professionals forget about taking care of themselves. And, you know, we're really good at taking care of other people, but it's really hard sometimes to take time for ourselves. But I think you also, on another occasion when we had talked, you know, being a good listener and listening to your staff and listening to your guests and being a good role model, and I think you hit perfectly about having that positive attitude and not taking on the negativity of others to really just kind of keep projecting a positive mental outlook. And, you know, that's been written about in books like Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is that mm-hmm. positive mental attitude can really make a huge difference. And every day, you know, adopting some manner of thinking. So how do you feed your mind? You take care of your body with the soaking in the mineral springs. How do you feed your mind? Are there certain books that you read or affirmations or you know, positive messaging that you put in?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because in my office, I've got papers taped all over the walls, but they a lot of times will be something somebody says to me, you know, something
favorite
I
quote.
Might read on the internet. You know, they're quotes, they're little phrases, they're maybe a page or two things. I don't take a lot of time to sit down and read entire books. I would like to do that someday. But short things. And sometimes, you know, I even keep a binder that has some of those things in it. And once in a while, if I'm feeling a little blue or a little funky, I just sit down and I kind of page through that. You know, I learned one time when I was a kid growing up, they told us, if you want to find something to pertain to in the Bible, just take it and let it fall open and see what it falls open to, because sometimes you get hit with a really strong message that way. And I do find that. I find that sometimes when I'm talking to people. You know, I've been really fortunate. You know, I had a gentleman that worked here at the hotel. His name was Claude Bell. Claude was 96 when he retired from here. And Claude was a massage therapist for 70 years.
Wow.
And I was so amazed by that man and his attitude towards life and his attitude towards people. I mean, most people, when Claude was here, when he was in his 90s, people thought he was in his 60s because of the way he carried himself and his positive attitude. Now, Claude lives in North St. Louis, and he is 101 years old now.
Wow.
And it's just those kind of things I find so amazing. I'm inspired by people like that. I had a great aunt that she lived to be 99 years old. She was still driving at the age of 93 and working at the courthouse in Belleville, Illinois. And she, after she retired from the courthouse, she'd walk to church every day to the cathedral and attend Mass. And my aunt, my great aunt, was just, she was such an amazing woman. She had an interesting way of viewing things. She was not extremely outspoken, but she was the type of person that when she said things, she really kind of listened. Because it just, it made so much sense. And she just didn't believe in taking yourself too seriously. Mm. And I have to catch myself on that once in a while because I tend to be a more serious type person. but I have to kind of take myself out of that and kind of like, oh, don't get so serious about life. It's just a moment that we're here.
Well, that is such great. That's such great wisdom. I love it. And I hope someday I'm considered to be that great aunt at 99. I'm a great aunt already with 30-some great nieces and nephews. And I love
awesome.
that she just had that special wisdom and that she shared those little things like not taking yourself too seriously. That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about, you know, leading by example. You're there, you're hands-on with your staff, you're very involved with their lives, with knowing their ups and downs, but how do you personally lead by example?
I am very involved in my staff. My staff is, they are a part of my family. I think I just do what I think needs to be done, you know, in the aspect that, okay, I might see one of my staff members, there's one here, she tries to do things that she really shouldn't be doing, like climbing a ladder or something, and I'll see her and I'll be like, okay, get down from that ladder and I will do it, you know, because it's just, I know that about her. She shouldn't be doing that. She's not quite steady enough for that. But God bless her for trying to keep forging forward. You know, I had a housekeeper that worked here, and her name was Mary. And Mary was in, I think, her late 70s, her early 80s, when we had a retirement party for her. Now, that lady was a housekeeper that she was here, oh, my goodness, I don't know how long, because she was one of the people that when we took over the hotel, she came with the hotel.
Wow.
And the very first weekend we were here at the hotel, Mary came in to work, and Mary was here 5 days a week. She came in to work at 9 a.m., and she left at 3 p.m. every day. And that woman, she just worked and worked and worked, but she was happy doing it. You know, I had talked to her one time about, you know, maybe would you like to have a couple more days off so you're not working so much. And she said, that's what keeps me going.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that. You know, I find that about myself. You know, if I'm, you know, I had a moment where we went to see our son. Our son is in the Navy, and he was getting ready to ship out. And so my husband and I went to help him move his stuff into storage and everything while he shipped out. And that weekend we worked and everything. But, you know, when we came home that Sunday night, I told my husband, I said, I'm going to work early in the morning. And he said, why? And I said, because I have to make sure everybody and everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very connected with my staff. They give me the strength I need because they're the people sometimes, you know, that are like, okay, Mary, it's going to be all right. You can take some time off from work. You know, the weekend that I had to leave, they all stepped up to the plate and they held the hotel together while I was gone.
Wow.
And it's very hard for me to leave work.
Mm-hmm. Well, it shows that you're loyal to them and then they're loyal to you. And
that's correct.
And it also shows, I think, what came through to me in the short time I've just known you, just a few weeks talking with you on the phone, is that you have a deep mission to serve others and that it really brings you joy to be in service to others. And I think in the hospitality business, you have to really love, you know, serving others and making the customer feel special and having guests, you know, return, because if they have a positive experience, of course, they're going to tell others. And now with social media, you know, the word can spread. In fact, that's how I originally heard about you through a friend that moved to Oakville, and then she posted something on Facebook, and other people have been posting now and sharing stories. Somebody had been to your hotel a few years ago and said that it's a neat place because there are ghost stories. So I wanted to ask you about the ghost stories. What kind of stories have you heard, and do you believe them?
Well, the kind of stories I've heard are that we do have some groups that do ghost hunting that come here to the hotel. They'll come a couple of weekends a year, and they will stay up all night and watch for the spirits. They're saying there's a lady here at the Original Springs. They call her the Lady in White, and she has been seen in various places of the hotel. Short story, one night I was leaving the restaurant. I closed down the restaurant, and there's a desk clerk on my front desk. Her name was Marie, and I've known Marie for a very long time. And so I sat down and was talking to her about how her family's doing and everything like that. And this gentleman comes out of one of our hotel rooms, and he comes down to the lobby, and he's looking around kind of wildly, and we don't really know what's going on. Is there a problem? No, there's no problem. Okay. So Marie and I were talking a little more, and he looks at us, he looks out on the porch, he looks out down the steps, says, like, sir, is there something that's bothering you? And no, there's nothing wrong. Okay. So then all of a sudden he comes to the desk, he said, do you guys have ghosts? We're like, why do you ask? Because I think there was one in my room. And what happened? He said, I was sleeping. He said, something startled me. And my wife was laying in bed next to me. He said, she stayed asleep, but he said, I sat up when I saw this figure standing at the end of our bed. And I said, well, what did the figure look like? He said, it was a long white gown with a bonnet. And I said, well, could you see the face? No, I couldn't see a face. But he said, I sat up in bed, and it moved back. And then I threw the covers back, and I put my foot onto the floor, and the figure went through the door. And I said, through the door? And he's like, I said, through the door. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, well, did you see her go by here? And we're like, no, we're sorry, we didn't see anything. And he said, that was really just the strangest thing I've ever seen. And I said, yes, that would be rather strange. He said, well, I'm going to go back and make sure everything's okay with my wife. Well, we never saw him anymore the rest of the night, and the next morning he was fine. So he wasn't evidently too bothered by it or anything. But before that, I never thought much of that, but before that, I used to have an office that sat above the swimming pool. And I just talking to the psychic that used to come here to the hotel, and I asked her after this gentleman had the issue, I asked her about it, and she said, oh, Mary, she said, I used to see that lady in a rocking chair right outside your office when your office was above the pool. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. She said, now, where is your office at? I said, well, I moved it down to the front office area because I'm at the front desk so much of the time. I'm kind of tired of running back and forth all the time. And she's like, and where was this room that this gentleman was in? And I said, well, it actually is right next to my office. And she said, okay, she said, this is what I think this lady is. She said, I think she's like a guardian angel for you. And when people come to the hotel that she feels unsecure about or she's just kind of questioning a little bit, she makes her presence known. She said not that they're bad or anything. She's just checking them out, and she watches over the hotel when you're not around. And I said, well, you know what? That's kind of cool. I kind of like that. I said, knowing that I have this guardian angel kind of helping me. Now, several people have thought this is Mrs. Sheerbaum is who they're correlating it with, because Mrs. Sheerbaum ran the hotel. She actually came to the original Springs the first time. She was from St. Louis. Her husband was a minister in St. Louis, and she had taken very ill. And he had taken her to all kinds of doctors, and they couldn't find any relief for her. So he had talked to someone, and they told him about the mineral baths here in Oakville. So he brought his wife out here to the mineral baths. And when they first came in, he had to carry her into the hotel because she could not help herself by walking. So he came in, and he brought her, and she took series of mineral baths. She stayed for about 3 weeks, and she took series of mineral baths. When she left that first time, she could leave with the assistance of crutches. So then she went back to St. Louis, and she came back later on, brought her canes and her crutches, and she took the mineral baths again. After several times doing this, Mrs. Sheerbaum left the hotel unassisted.
Wow.
And so she heard that the hotel was for sale, and then she convinced her husband and several people from the church to purchase the hotel, and they moved out here to Oakville. And she ran the hotel with her husband. Her husband died, and then she ran the hotel for a number of years with her children. Her one son actually signed the front window of the lobby, the doors where you walk into the lobby, there's side lights on the side of them, and he actually signed the one. His signature's on the window.
That's funny.
Wow. Oh, it is. It's very interesting. But think she's here, and, you know, I mean, I've never personally seen anything, Brenda. But, you know, if I'm going to have spirits here that want to work as guardian angels for me, I think we all need an angel.
You just gave me goosebumps because I really believe in angels. And, you know, a couple of days before my mom died in a car crash, unexpectedly, of course, we had no idea she was going to die. A couple of days before that, we were driving from New Hampshire to Maryland, moving some furniture, and she asked me out of the blue the name of my angel. Well, I never considered thinking that I had my own personal angel assigned to me, and I just thought it was a road trip game, and we talked about angels, and we named my angel Amelia, and we named her angel Lily, and then she said something very profound. She said, well, if you ever need to get me a message, you have your angel talk to my angel. And I laughed it off, and that was on a Sunday afternoon on October 20th. 2 days later, she was killed in a car crash.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I survived. They thought I was the fatality. I was cut out of the car. I was in a wheelchair for 2 months. And, you know, it's a miracle I'm still walking. I have wires and screws in my leg. And, you know, after I got out of the hospital, I was thinking about that angel story, that angel conversation we had. And I asked a friend of mine who plays guitar to write me a song for a celebration of life. I was having a memory of my mother, in addition to the traditional Catholic funeral that we had in her hometown in New Hampshire. But a month later, I had this celebration of life, and he called me. The musician called me 3 weeks after the accident. He couldn't finish the song. He had started it. He was stuck. He had writer's block. And he said, "What's been going on? Tell me, you know, what's been happening with you?" And I had just had a nap and had dreamt of my mother for the first time since she had died. And she had come to me, and she was smiling, and she was sort of like, you know, that kind of what people call a spirit or someone standing there. I could see her very clearly at the foot of my steps, and she was smiling, and she initially motioned to me to come to her for a hug, and I motioned that sort of my leg was broken and I couldn't get off the couch for several, weeks, but I couldn't get off the couch to go to her, and she nodded that she understood, and she just smiled and sort of folded her arms across her chest, and she was very peaceful. And so when I woke from this nap, I was like filled with peace that she was okay, that she was still with me, that she was communicating, that she was fine, and that she would never leave me. And so I told this story to the musician, and he said, "Oh, that's perfect. I'm going to finish the song." So he performed the song a month after she died, and he called it "The Name of Your Angel." And he actually recorded it on a CD. I'll have to bring it
up so
you can hear it. Yeah, and
that
I've never told
so
that story
cool.
on my show, so thank you for prompting the angel story. But we do on this network, Greater Good Ministries, we do believe in angels. A lot of the shows talk about that. And, you know, and I think people that are not comfortable with death or who have not had a positive experience, I mean, for me, that was a positive experience.
Exactly.
So sometimes if people aren't prepared and they see a spirit or they feel a presence, they get freaked out and scared. But for those of us who do believe that life is eternal and do believe that we have angels all around us, I'm intrigued by that, and it doesn't scare me. I think it's beautiful, and it's a great thing. So it's interesting, you know, and there's different things. And you have a lot of great stories, and I think this shows that the experience of staying at the original Springs Hotel in Oakville, Illinois, for our listeners is to know that you're not only getting a really great experience at an affordable price. I must say, your prices are great. Just get a hotel night, go away for some rejuvenation, renewal, enjoy the pool, the indoor pool, the spas, have a massage, go out to dinner, just walk around the town a little bit. Tell us some of the unusual guests that you have had stay there in the last few years since, you've had it for 24 years. What have been some of the unusual guest requests or guests that have come to the hotel?
Well, we get all kinds of guests here. I mean, we've done things like, I was thinking about this the other day. I think we have had like 10 weddings here at the hotel. We have baptisms. We've actually had 4 people that have had full submersion baptisms in our swimming pool.
Oh my goodness.
You know, we've got people that come from all over the world. We had 3 groups that were here 2 months ago from China. We have people that come from Australia and Greenland and some of those places that come once a year. They're here for a function in a neighboring town, but they keep coming back to the hotel. This is like the 6th or 7th year that they've done this function. It's called the Grand American. It's a shooting competition. They shoot clay birds and things like that, and that's down in Sparta. And we're probably 25 minutes from there, but they choose to stay here because they love the uniqueness of the hotel and the uniqueness of the staff. Our staff, we
wow.
have so much fun when they come.
Oh, wow. And so if people want to find out more about your property, I know you have a Facebook page, and how else can they find out more information?
Well, you can Google the Original Springs Hotel. You can Google Oakville, and the Original Springs will come up. Now, that's one thing that's really interesting about the village's name, Oakville. We are the only Oakville in the entire country. So if you Google Oakville, Illinois, if you just Google Oakville, it's going to pop up to us.
Wow, that's good.
It's really kind of interesting. But you can call us, 243, it's 618-243-5458. We can give you information. We'll mail you information. We are on Facebook and Twitter. Just look us up.
Fantastic.
And book a weekend
stay with
us. Well,
thank you so much, Mary. I really appreciate it. It was fun. I look forward to meeting you tomorrow. I'm going to come up and check out your place. And we have another guest on hold that we're going to get to right after our station identification and a short PSA. So thank you, Mary, so much. And we'll see you soon.
We'll see you tomorrow, Brenda. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Frazier on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Hello and welcome back to Alive to Thrive. We're doing something a little bit different today. We have two guests, and my next guest is Mario Farwell. He's a native St. Louisan, and he has an interesting background in theater and musical theater. He's been writing plays and musicals for over 30 years, and he has had productions performed off-Broadway in New York, San Diego, Minneapolis, and St. Louis. And he's the founder and current director of the St. Louis Writers Group here in St. Louis. So welcome, Mario. Are you on the line with us?
Yes. Hi, Brenda. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Thanks for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Oh, sure. No problem. Yes, I'm doing fine. Go ahead.
Well, I just also wanted to say a little bit more about your background, that you've been an award-winning playwright. You've had different plays, and so fascinating that you've also you've been to Ghana, Africa, is that correct? I see that in your notes.
My play Seamstress of St. Francis Street was produced in Ghana, Africa.
Okay, fantastic.
Yes.
So you've done several plays, and I know that we're talking today about the Starfest production, and that there's a fundraising party tomorrow night on Saturday, November 16th. So tell us about what Starfest is.
Starfest is a full-length musical comedy. It's a sci-fi spoof, kind of loosely based on the old Flash Gordon serials, and it has a lot of pop rock music. It's a lot of fun for the entire family to come see.
Okay, and how long have you been working on this production?
I've been working on Starfest for about 25 years, so it's kind of like my little baby that's finally kind of coming to life and about to go out on its own. It actually started off, I was teaching in New York City many years ago, and I decided to produce a children's musical, and it started off as a children's musical. And years later, we decided to take it on further, and it's been development changes over the years.
And so as people may or may not know, it takes a lot of money to stage a musical production. The costumes, the staging, the back of house, there's so many things that people don't see that cost money. How much money do you need to raise for this full production?
Well, the minimum we're hoping to raise is about $8,000, but we're probably, to have a little margin, $12,000 is more like it. We have to pay the directors, we have to pay the choreographers, the lighting designer, the scenic designer, the costume designers, the music director. So it's a lot of people that need to be paid, plus building the sets, creating the costumes, paying for the theater. So it's quite a bit of money, you know, to produce a full of the musical, and also there's the cost of copying and having the music arranged since it's all new.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
So the fundraiser tomorrow night. Tell us about that. What's going to be happening at the event tomorrow?
We're going to have a lovely fundraiser. It's going to be at the Sioux Arts Station. The Sioux Arts Station is located at the corner of 12th and Gravois. And we're having Michelle McCausland. She's a wonderful entertainer. She's going to be emceeing, and she's also going to be doing three songs from the show. And we have the affair is being catered by Joe Gilsinger. He's doing some wonderful hors d'oeuvres, and we're going to have a bar service by CJ's on the Hill. It's a new Italian restaurant. And we also have Jay Lambert, Soulard Mobile Entertainment, is going to be doing the music for us. So it's going to be a party not to be missed.
Well, that sounds fantastic, and I'm sorry that I will be missing it, but the actual production of Starfest will have its world premiere here in St. Louis, pretty exciting, coming up in the spring. Tell us about those dates and where that will be taking place.
Yeah, we're going to be doing – the world premiere is going to be at the Ivory Theater. The Ivory Theater is located at 7620 Michigan Avenue in St. Louis, and the dates are going to be April – 25th, 26th, 27th, and May 2nd, May 3rd, and May 4th, and that's 2014, so next year, the end of April and the beginning of May.
And so when will tickets start going on sale?
Probably
in March?
March or February.
Uh-huh. And I know you have a Facebook page and such. So how long is the show, a couple hours, 2-3 hours?
It's about probably two hours to 2:20. We haven't really, since it's never been produced, we'll have to see. When you put together a new show, it's always a lot of surprises, a lot of things you have to work out. So I estimated it's going to be about 2 to 2:20.
And so after it runs here in St. Louis, what are your bigger dreams for it? Do you want to take it on the road to other cities, or what's the big vision?
Well, the big vision is eventually get it to Broadway. I've actually been entering a lot of big competitions recently. I recently entered the Richard Rodgers competition. There's a big competition that takes place in New York where they have a lot of producers see musicals, and you get a chance to, they give you $5,000 to do an actual small production of it. And that's called the New York Musical Theater Festival. And I actually was invited to apply for that, so that was a good sign that they liked the demo tape that much that they invited me to apply. And I've entered the Sundance Theater Lab, most people are familiar with Sundance for a film festival, but they also have a theater element, so I entered that. And I'm going to be entered in the Eugene O'Neill Theater Festival, Musical Theater
Festival.
So I'm keeping on, circulating into the, the competition scene.
That's awesome. And so, go ahead.
Recently, yesterday, I got a call from the Village Theater, in upstate New York, and they requested, they liked the demo. I sent them a demo a couple of months ago, and they liked it, and they requested to see the complete script. And they specialize in developing full-length musicals, so I'm very hopeful that I can maybe get something going in there.
Wow. Now, it's a very ambitious undertaking to go from, you know, having this idea, you know, writing the story. You wrote the books and the lyrics, is that correct?
Yes, I did, yeah. It's an interesting procedure because when I started writing, I had no idea how to do it. So it's like I had to teach myself a lot of it over the years. So it's a lot of reading, a lot of kind of trial and error. But I feel like after 25 years, I've gotten pretty good at it.
Uh-huh. And so has the support of the writers group played a role in your development?
Oh, yes, most definitely. You know, it's just like I had a reading of the Starfest last month, and I found out the script was way too long, and I went back and I edited it down, and it was pretty easy to get that straight. But having the writers group there, I can see it when I do a script, I present it before the writers group, and I can see what the strengths are and what the weaknesses are. And I can go back and start redeveloping or correcting the errors in it.
So it's really important to have the feedback of peers and people you respect and admire. And I think there's a lot of writers that, you know, they get very, like you said, it's their baby. And they're afraid to show it to people until it's, like, completely done and perfect. And then they don't have that benefit of that feedback. So was that scary at first to share your writing with others?
I think it's kind of scary all the time. I mean, I still get very nervous when I show my stuff because, I mean, it is your baby. You want it to be treated very nice and hope everybody likes it. But you also, when you're writing, you want to, you know, actually get it done to the next level. So you have to be open for criticism. You have to be open to making changes. And that's one good thing with me as a writer. I'm always open to listening to what other people have to say, and I'm willing to make changes and you know, major changes if necessary. So I think as a professional writer, you have to be able to listen and take other people's feedback and use that
mm-hmm.
feedback to better your work.
Mm-hmm. And that is so important. We were just talking about that with the previous guest about, you know, running a hotel and the similarities between running a hotel and running a musical production is that it's a very collaborative process. And
right.
sometimes yeah. artists, you know, when they're in the art of creation, whether they're painting or writing or making a music, I mean, it is a solitary endeavor in that initial stage, but then taking it out, I know I just recently started painting and, you know, we had a little student art show at a gallery and we had all the art there. And, you know, I was wondering how is my stuff going to look next to someone whose work I thought was better. But, you know, it actually made me feel really great to be in the company of people that had a variety of talent. There's some starting out, some really, really just naturally gifted, but the production of a musical is a very collaborative process, and it evolves. And so we like to talk about those topics on this program about how success comes into being on any team. So what do you think are some of the things you've witnessed on your team in terms of your success to get to the point where you're now having a fundraiser?
Well, I guess the main thing in working on a musical is that they try to be able to accept other people's creativity, their ideas, because you're not the sole force in the creation. I had an interesting story on getting my composer for Starfest. I had to do a kind of an international search for him, and I found my composer actually lives in Athens, Greece. So I found him on the internet, and we started corresponding, and he turned out to be an amazing composer. I mean, he has a studio in Greece, and he does a lot of commercial work there. So we kind of go back and forth, and he has ideas, and I have ideas, and we kind of work out. And I try, and any collaboration, you have to give room for the other person to bring their creative input to the table. So in hiring scenic designers and costume designers and lighting designers, I will always listen to what they have to say and of course, input my own creative feelings, but it kind of becomes like a combination of everybody's ideas. So it's no single person that dictates in a collaborative effort like creating a musical.
And so how has the Internet changed, I mean, producing a musical? This is fascinating to me that your composer's from Athens, Greece. So you've never met him in person?
No, I've never met him in person. We're actually hoping to, like, raise some money to bring him here, like, as a guest artist. But how we work, I email him or we Skype, and we discuss the songs back and forth, and he'll send me music. I said, well, this, you need to do this or you need to do that, and he'll send me something else. But most of the time, he'll send me something that is just perfect. It's just beautiful right off the bat. We've only had to go back and forth on a few songs. So,
well, it's pretty exciting that you'll be raising the money to bring him here, hopefully for the premiere, and keep us posted on how that goes. And I know there are things like crowdfunding sites that you can now raise private funds. The law has changed in recent past where private individuals can raise money. You know, my background has been raising money for nonprofits for the last 30 years, but now individual people that have a dream, that have a project like yours, can raise money on crowdfunding sites. And maybe I'll bring a guest on to talk about that because I think you can legally raise up to $1 million now.
Wow.
On a variety of Internet platforms that are out there that are extremely cost-effective and work because they use someone's story, a personal story, pictures, and then that link can be placed a lot of places and it can go viral and such. So do you have clips or anything on YouTube that people can go and visit and look at?
Yes, I do. I have, I have a YouTube station that they can just go to Mario Farwell on YouTube, and it will bring up all my – but I do have a promotional video for Starfest, and it's actually – it was done in Athens, Greece professionally, and it's very good. It goes through four – you get snippets of four of the songs from the show, and it's quite entertaining. I recommend people go to YouTube and take a look at it.
All righty, and that's MarioFarwell, and we will have to have you on again because we're just about almost out of time. We have about 2 minutes left to talk about your other musical project on Joan of Arc, which is one of my favorite women of history. Will that be being produced anywhere in the next year or two?
Yes, I actually have. It's going to be produced the end of December at the Ivory Theater also.
The end of December at the Ivory Theater. Okay. Well,
yes.
We'll make sure we get that out on Facebook, et cetera. Well, good luck, Mario, with your fundraising event this weekend, and we will make sure people watch that YouTube video and attend the premiere opening of Starfest, making its world premiere in St. Louis at the Ivory Theater, April 25, 26, 27, and the first weekend of May of 2014. Thank you, and have a fabulous weekend. Have fun. Good luck.
Thank you so much. Bye.
See ya. Bye-bye.